We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Craig is usually a fan of water cooler talk, but it's draft season, and that's all anyone wants to talk about. The Athletic has loads of articles about this year's draft, but Greg doesn't have The Athletic, so now he's filling up his water bottle in the bathroom sink. Which, to remind you, is the sink people use after they use the bathroom. Get The Athletic and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's Byte.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
The Bowling Green defense dominates in a football win over Akron, and the BGSU hockey team earns a split at number 2 Minnesota State. We'll talk about it on this edition of the Ziggy Cast.
This is the BGSU Ziggy Cast from Learfield, your home for Falcons updates, interviews, previews, and highlights. Now, here is your host, Todd Walker.
Good to be back with you for another edition of the Ziggy Cast, a busy time of year with football, basketball, hockey all intertwined. We'll jump right into football and hockey on this edition of the Ziggy Cast, starting with BGSU football's 35-6 win over Akron this past Saturday, as BG moved to 3-6 overall and 2-3 in the Mid-American Conference. And the Falcons got it done with a dominating defensive performance. And we'll get to the highlights before we hear from Coach Leffler with his post-game thoughts. Later, my broadcast partner John Gibson will chime in talking BG football. And then we'll hear our interview with hockey coach Ty Eigner. Let's get to the highlights from Saturday's win. Didn't start out that great for the Falcons. Akron had the ball first and drove for a field goal to go up 3-0. And then Bowling Green punter Matt Naranjo dropped the snap on Bowling Green's next possession to set the Zips up on the plus side of the field, but the defense held them to a field goal try, which was good, and Akron led 6-0. Then the Bowling Green offense found its stride for the first time on its second possession. It started by converting a 3rd-and-8 with a big play to Austin Doris, the big tight end senior graduate transfer from Indiana, as he converted a 3rd-and-8. And then the very next play, Bowling Green hit for a big one downfield. Falcons now put Loy under center on 1st-and-10. Fake the handoff and the reverse and throw down the right side of the field. And wide open is Quentin Morris inside the 10, taken down near the 2-yard line. Quentin Morris with a big gain of 45 yards. It's 1st-and-goal.
Hey, Quentin Morris, you've got to get the ball into number 80's hands.
Quentin Morris's catch set up Andrew Clare with a 2-yard run. Clare back in action after missing several games with injury, and BG had a 7-6 lead with 3:19 to go on the first. The teams then exchanged punts twice as we moved into the second quarter. And that's when the Bowling Green defense came up with the first of four turnovers on the day. One of the young defensive backs starting to emerge got his first career pick.
Two receivers each way as they motion one from right to left. Blitz comes. They pick it up. Nelson, left side, picked off! That's an interception for Bowling Green at the 20-yard line. Davin Wilson's got the first of his career. Boy, he undercut that route and picked it off for BGSU. Well done.
After that, it didn't take long for Bowling Green to drive the requisite 20 yards for a touchdown. And the TD play was a bit of a throwback to Tim Tebow and the Florida offense back in the day.
Brings a man in motion, fakes it to him. Lloyd, jump pass over the middle. Touchdown, BGSU on the juggle. Quentin Morris, Akron almost knocked it out of his hands. But the Falcons have a touchdown. Quentin Morris catches the jump pass from Grant Loy, and it's 13-6.
Bowling Green now had a 14-6 lead, and the defense would get the ball right back.
Two receivers to each side, a running back in his right hip, second and 11. Nelson looking to throw. Blitz comes. He throws over the middle. Intercepted. That's Carl Brooks. He's got the 30. He's got the 20. He's got the 10, and he's taken down. Oh, 44 wanted six on that pick, but he couldn't quite get there. But how about Carl Brooks dropping back from his D-line spot to pick it clean and take it down to the 8-yard line?
Two plays later, Grant Loy cashed in that Carl Brooks interception for a touchdown.
14-6, Bowling Green leads. 7 minutes to go until halftime. Loy this time is alone in the shotgun. A wing on each side up in front of him. Two receivers left, one to the right. Loy, QB draw, has room. Grant Loy, touchdown, BGSU. Touchdown. A 6-yard touchdown run for Grant Loy, his fourth of the year. And Bowling Green has a 20-6 lead.
Now 21-6, Bowling Green's defense would not relent. On the very next series, it was Carl Brooks again stymieing the Zips.
Now for Nelson after they leave the backfield in motion, and Carl Brooks has a sack. Akron cannot handle 44. He had a pick and now a sack as he dominates from that defensive end spot, and Akron will have to punt on 4th and 8.
So we went to halftime with Bowling Green up 21-6 and in firm control and set to receive the second half kickoff. BG didn't score on that possession, but they held the ball for over 6 minutes and really sort of salted the game away already at that point. But after the teams exchanged punts, Bowling Green's defense would set up yet another score, this time knocking the ball free from the quarterback.
Nelson out of the gun. Here comes the blitz, and he is going to be sacked, and the ball came out.
And Konowalski has it, I believe.
Bowling Green recovers. BG Melvin Jackson on the hit, and the recovery by Konowalski.
Starting from the 6-yard line, the BG offense for the third time of the day would take advantage of great field position and score a touchdown.
Loy in the shotgun, 3rd and goal at the 2. Denley with him. Hands to Bryson. Touchdown, BGSU. Bryson Denley. A 2-yard touchdown run with 5:23 to go in the third. And Bowling Green has a 27-6 lead.
BG would hold that 28-6 lead till early in the fourth quarter when they put together their second good drive of the day. Their other scoring drives had been set up by the defense. But this one, a 9-play, 58-yard drive, culminated by a touchdown run by Andrew Clare.
Loy will go under center. Clare straight behind him. Toss right. Clare cuts it. Spins. Cuts again. And he is going to get to the end zone. Touchdown,
wow.
BGSU. Andrew Clare doing Andrew Clare things. And Bowling Green leads 34-6.
Akron's last possession was snuffed out by Ty Redding with his first career interception. And the Falcons posted a 35-6 victory. Carl Brooks, Davin Wilson, Ty Redding, all garnering their first career INTs. Final numbers on the day. Total offense, Bowling Green 276, Akron 100. And Bowling Green ran 83 plays. And despite only 276 yards of offense, they had 17 first downs and possessed the ball for 37 minutes as they get the win with 6 sacks and 4 turnovers from the defense. After the game, head coach Scott Leffler met with the assembled media.
I thought defensively we played outstanding. We played complimentary football. Conditions weren't great out there, but I think we did a good job besides on the punt team taking care of the football. And we wanted to, the whole idea of the game is that we wanted to, We thought that we could create turnovers on the short side of the field, and offensively we just needed to take advantage of those situations, which I thought we did. We rushed the ball for 62 times, a buck 56. It's still not good enough. The penalties were ridiculous. We need to get that done. But I'm happy with how we took care of the ball, minusing special teams. I thought special teams-wise was hands down not where we want, not what we expect around here. But offensively, we took care of the ball, had the ball on the short end of the field the majority of the day. Defensively, I thought they played outstanding. So we played complimentary football. It was ugly, but we were able to get a win. And the people that I'm most ecstatic for is those seniors that'll never play another game on Saturday in the Dwight. I thought we made an emphasis to make sure that that we were going to be fully committed to make sure that those kids went out victorious, and they did. So that's probably the highlight of the day, is them being able to walk out of here winners.
It was early, but those two red zone stops in the first quarter to hold two field goals,
mm-hmm.
two touchdowns, how much did that help set the tone for the way you guys?
Yeah, I thought we kept them out of the end zone. I thought defensively we did a really good job being able to hold them to those two field goals in the red area. And the difference was is that when we got those short ends of the fields, we were able to score touchdowns. They kicked field goals. So it was ugly, but we expected it to be this type of game.
You talked about a lot of times this year not taking advantage of opportunities. When you do get those three deep in their territory, touchdown, 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 do you see that as a step in the right direction?
Absolutely. We've had a hard time scoring consistently. So to be able to have a little success, that's definitely a step in the right direction.
A few days ago, we were talking about finding positives to kind of balance things out. With that mind, you know, in that area with the win here, mentally, it's going to be really helpful.
Yeah, it's great. Anytime that you're able to find a way to get a win, winning is hard. I mean, even whenever you're right, it's hard. And so anytime that you get one, you're ecstatic afterwards, but we'll just like we always do, we'll get 24 hours to enjoy it, and then back to the grind and get ready for Miami of Ohio.
What were your thoughts on Andrew's performance today?
He's beat up. It's been beat up all year long. This foot deal is a problem, and I thought I think we gave it to him 29 times, and He was limping, and it's been a struggle to keep him healthy this year. So we'll see where we go in the next couple of weeks with him.
The jump pass, I seem to recall someone else doing that. You borrowed from Irvin a little bit.
Yeah, we did. Yep, we sure did. Tim was pretty good at that.
Yeah, he was. Did you put that in this week, or has that been?
That's been in for the last 2 weeks, and we finally got the opportunity to run it, so it was cool. Grant was fired up.
Was there some hesitation? Because I saw you going down the sideline, both like, maybe call kind of up there. Is there a certain look you need?
Yeah, we were worried that the safety was going to be in the middle of the field, and right before the snap, he went over and they played zero coverage, and we got the look, but it was almost a timeout. Yeah. So if we didn't get the look, we were going to get out of it, and we didn't have a kill on it, so I was going to call a timeout. We didn't have an automatic to get out of it, so. But it was cool. I was happy for Q. I was happy. I mean, those kids love that stuff, so it was fun.
You good?
There were quite a few guys beaten up today. Just to be in the roster in the shape it is right now and to still win a football game, well, how do you take that?
You know what? I feel bad for both sides right now. And what I mean by that is both our opponent and ourselves. They're in the same situation that we're in. Hopefully that in the next couple months they change the rules where we can obtain more initials to make their program better and our program better. And we're so depleted with numbers right now. They are too. And hopefully in the near future that those rules change and we can upgrade. And because it's just not right for the safety of the players. I mean, I don't care what they say. it is not right. I totally 100% disagree with these 25 initials for a place that has number troubles. All of a sudden, you're playing. Jack Kramer's still in the game with 2 minutes left to go in the game. Like, what are we doing? I mean, that's not right. And I just think for player safety, it needs to change. And I hope here in the near future that we are able to pass those rules and help programs that that need numbers, because at the end of the day, it doesn't matter. We can get our numbers right here in the next 3 or 4 years if they keep the rules the same way. But for player safety, they need to change it. So I hope that that occurs here soon.
Coming into the game, obviously Akron's offense was at the bottom of the pack, but your guys' defense was also at the bottom. That was skewed a little bit with some of those Power 5 teams. But how encouraging is it that it was your defense that kind of rose to the occasion and made those plays?
Yeah, what was cool today is they had a couple sudden change situations that they haven't been good at all during the season. And, you know, we gave the ball back with the muff snap on the punt, and they were able to get a stop right off the get-go. So that was impossible. I mean, baby steps. You know, baby steps is what we're doing right now, and so there were some positives for sure.
Who impressed you most on the defensive
end? Excuse me?
Who impressed you most today?
I thought Carl Brooks played well. I thought he played well. He was impressive. He didn't have a beginning. At the beginning of the week, he did not have a good Tuesday, and he really bounced back on Wednesday and Thursday and played well. So, yeah, I thought Carl Brooks really played really well. It was fun to watch him out there today.
Talk to us a minute about the offense coach. You mentioned the fact you got some short fields that helped you out, but what do you attribute some of the struggles today? It seemed like Grant missed a few open receivers from the time.
Yeah, the weather wasn't great, but that's not an excuse. And we missed some gimmies, and we need to continue to, when those opportunities present themselves, make it. And you know, my big preaching right now is, you know, you're 50-50 in practice. Those are you're gonna be 50-50 in the game. You know, so the ability to have competitive excellence during the week is so critical to improve, because whenever you get in games that are super, super competitive, it's equal. You got to fall back to your training. You got to fall back to what you're doing year in, year out, day in, day out. You got to fall back into it, and you make those plays in practice consistently. You make them on Saturday. So we need to practice better is the moral of the story. We need to practice better. And we made some huge jumps, I thought. There was, on Wednesday in particular, I thought there was two or three of our offensive linemen that kind of got it. They, during the 46 competitive reps that we had, I want to say they played their tails off for the first time in practice. So that was very, very encouraging. And now, the biggest thing is trying to get all 85 or 90 guys, whatever we have on our team, to practice like that. That's when you get good, is whenever you're practicing at that type of tempo and mentality. So we need to get better in that area. It's the biggest challenge in our program right now.
You expressed some frustration with how things played out before the end of the half last week. How do you feel about the thoughts of how it played out this week?
Well, it was a different deal. Our defense was playing well. Their offense was not playing well, so we came out, we threw a smash play, we threw low and away, and then we came back to a double move. They were in quarters coverage, he made a good throw away, and then we ran the Q counter to try to get out of dodge. But this week I have no problem trying to go score, just because of we weren't putting our defense in a bad situation. We're playing a different offense. Those Cats last week were different. They were pretty good. And so, yeah, it's week to week.
We welcome in my broadcast partner, John Gibson, now as BGSU hits a off week of sorts with the transition to Maction. There will be no game this Saturday. The Falcons will be at Miami on Wednesday, November 13th. And Gibby joins me now. First of all, Gibby, the time off for a team, you know, sometimes it comes at a maybe a bad time because you're on a roll, but some teams really can use the break. I think this team would fall into the latter category, wouldn't you?
Yeah, they definitely could use the break. I mean, you've got young players that are going to be stepping into the lineup with these last four games being available, and or with these last four games being available for freshmen to play and still maintain their red shirt. You've also got, you know, a mass unit, especially at the running back position, and your defensive backfield. Some guys are injured. You've got an opportunity now to get healthy. You welcome those extra 2 to 3 days to get some healing, and hopefully you can get some guys back, but also get some of the guys that have not been playing, get them coached up, and at least you want to be able to give them one or two schemes, one or two plays, or a group of plays that they can actually play in and be successful.
And the Falcons will be hitting this off week, coming off their best performance of the year, perhaps defensively, as they held Akron to 100 yards of total offense in a 35-6 victory. And we knew that Akron was struggling offensively coming in, but when you looked at how they played when Cato Nelson was in the lineup and two MAC games previous with him playing, they averaged over 300 yards of offense against Central Michigan and Kent. So BG holding them to 100 yards and 6 points, I think some people are poo-pooing it a little, saying, well, Akron hadn't scored a touchdown in three games, but two of those were without Nelson. So I think the defense deserves a lot of credit here, even though Akron is certainly not one of the great offenses in the conference.
Anytime you hold a team to 100 yards in a game, four quarters of a football game, your defense deserves some credit. I thought that the defense played at a level that we hadn't seen since the Toledo game. You saw, you know, players, Carl Brooks, Nico Lawton, and once again, those guys are making plays in the backfield as opposed to downfield. You saw Davin Wilson step in, get his first interception. You saw Carl Brooks, you know, look beautiful on that interception that he had, and the return looked more like a tight end than a defensive end. So you saw players that were stepping up and making plays on the defensive end. Jordan Anderson continued his tremendous ascent to, you know, the top of the defensive stat lines. You saw these players doing these things. So the defense definitely deserves some credit. This Akron offense, though not the most potent, I mean, 100 yards of offense is hard to hold a team to at the collegiate level. Cato Nelson, who's never been the strongest passer, was harassed all day in the pocket when he dropped back to pass and was not allowed to be an effective scrambler or runner. There was just not a lot of space for Akron, and that's due to very good defensive play by Bowling Green. The question is, you know, you want to be able to see Bowling Green do it against the better offenses in the conference, the Central Michigans and the Western Michigans. But, you know, against the Akrons, you know, they have to be able to try to put up those efforts.
Hey, you look at Bowling Green, and that's been the up-and-down nature of the defense. There have been times when they have really gotten after the quarterback, other times not so much, and other than simplifying it that they're playing maybe better offensive lines than other teams, it seems like, though, when this defensive line figures out how to get to the quarterback, magically the defense gets a lot better, Gibby. Funny how that works, right?
Yeah, whenever you get pressure, you know your pass defense gets tremendously better. You know, like I said, it was great to watch. You know, even Roland Walder got in there and had a couple of quarterback pressures. But watching Carl Brooks, you know, work as a defensive end, watching him, you know, with the moves and the counter moves, watching Nico Lawton and really, you know, create problems in there in the defensive line, that's where your defense starts. I mean, no matter if it's pass or run, if you can get pressure or disruption with your down four, your defense is going to be a lot better for it. When you start talking about all, you know, and you know, as an offensive player, you know, that was the thing that sucked the most. When you snap that ball and there's a defensive lineman in your face, nobody wants to see that.
Hey, you look at the sack numbers for Bowling Green this year. They had 4 against Morgan State. That's a win. They had 5 against Louisiana Tech. That was a loss, but 5 against Toledo and a win, 6 against Akron and a win. And they also had 2 sacks at Kansas State. So when this defense has had big games on the sack line, they are 3-1. No coincidence there in their losses. Notre Dame, Central Michigan, Western Michigan, Kent State, and Kansas State combined, they had 3 sacks in those games. So it's a pretty clear line of demarcation there.
Well, yeah, without a doubt, I think you look and you see those things. I think that's pretty common for that. I think that's pretty common for the nation. You know, the better your defensive line team plays, the better your defense plays. And, you know, with Bowling Green, I think it's exacerbated by some of the youth that we have. I think it makes it difficult on our defense because we did have the defections from the defensive line, and the defensive line was a place of struggle last year. You know, but when you lose a guy like Kyle Jr. or Josh Croslin, when you lose those guys, it makes it tough to continuously get pressure because both of those guys are good football players.
Well, I think where we've seen the improvement, though, in the defense to hold somebody to 100 yards is when you combine that pressure that BG was able to get against Akron. But unlike some of the earlier games, the defensive backfield is now starting to round into shape, and you talked a little about it earlier. Jordan Anderson has really come into the forefront. We've talked about Juwan Hudson throughout the season and now Davin Wilson at the other cornerback spot. Some of these young kids are starting to blossom in that defensive backfield here, and that's one of those positions, Gibby, that maybe takes a little longer to flourish.
Without a doubt, it does. Playing defensive backfield, I think, along with quarterback and left tackle, are probably the three most difficult positions to play. You know, and I think, you know, we saw in our history when Coach Nick Monroe was here through Coach Clawson and Babers, we saw that those guys, we saw Nick Monroe be able to continuously grow cornerbacks throughout the year. And we're seeing it again here with Juwan Hudson and now Davin Wilson. Both of those players at the cornerback position have grown, you know, Juwan Hudson throughout the course of the year, and Davin Wilson has kind of stepped in and really stepped in at a high level. And then Jordan Anderson in that defensive backfield, it's been tough. Like, you know, we thought, you know, when Juwan Hudson came in against Kansas State, you know, we realized, okay, they're going to pick on him, and they're continuously picking on him. And when that happens, it's like, uh-oh. You know, this is going to be a very long season because it says a lot about Juwan Hudson, about how tough he is mentally, because, you know, he was roasted. I mean, he was literally the toast of the town, and not in a good way, in Manhattan. And to see where he was last week, and then to see other freshmen defensive backs stepping in, and not only stepping in and filling a space, but stepping in and making plays, that bodes well for your defense on a lot of different levels.
I guess some credit needs to go out to the secondary coaches. The safeties coach is Jacob Schoonover, and then the secondary coach is LaMarcus Hicks, who is the lone holdover from he and Jacob are both kept over from last year's staff. So they're doing a good job. And you look at the game against Akron too, Gibby, I think it was the biggest, most glaring example of Coach Leffler's idea of playing complementary football, because the offense was certainly not exciting or explosive or, frankly, hugely effective throughout the day as far as rolling up and down the field. But they got short fields, they punched in touchdowns, and they held onto the ball for 37 minutes despite having only 276 yards. So they converted third downs, they held the ball, and when the defense gave them good field position, they converted. That's complementary football, and that's a recipe for this team this year.
It is, and it's a situation where you started to see one of the big things that we saw was that we didn't get behind the sticks a lot. There weren't a lot of the mental errors that caused us to be behind the sticks. We weren't having to pick up, you know, first and 15s. We weren't having to pick up second and 13s. We were able to get positive yardage on first down. Even if it was only 3-4 yards, we were able to stay within the sticks and create very manageable third down situations. Grant Lloyd didn't make any bad decisions throwing the football that led to turnovers. And that's the type of football we have to play. Grant Lloyd is not a guy that's going to go out there, Tom Brady, Drew Brees, and win football games. He's a guy that has to manage the game, has to complete passes when the opportunities comes, and he's got to run the football. And those are things that we did well in this game. You know, in addition, it was good to see Andrew Clare back out there, seeing, you know, getting Drew Clare out there. That adds a lot to the offense. I mean, he not only was he out there, but he looked healthy. And so it was good to see him, 39 carries. I mean, but you figure between Andrew Clare and Bryson Denley, they had nearly 50 carries. They had 49 carries between the two players. That's a heck of a, I mean, that's anytime you run the ball 50 times, you want to be somewhere near 200 yards. We didn't get to 200 yards, but we got to 150, and we got to a point where, hey, we're controlling the clock and we're being able to move the ball and pick up first downs with just by running the football.
Yeah, the running backs, Claire and Denley, 49 carries, 148 yards combined, so 3 yards a carry. But when you add in R.B. Marlowe and a couple of jet sweeps and Grant Loy on the Q runs, BG with 62 rushing plays on the day and only 21 pass attempts. So clearly the game plan was to do exactly what they did. And so now Bowling Green stands with 3 wins on the season, and that includes a couple of league wins. And, you know, as you look at the rest of the season, Gibby, I think you see 3 East teams all in contention or thinking they are. Certainly Ohio and Miami are in contention. They are tied right now for the top spot in the league as we record this with only 1 league loss. Buffalo has a couple of league losses, but they seem to really be turning it on here as they throttled Eastern Michigan over the weekend. When you look at the last 3 games, I got to believe that this next game is probably the best chance for Bowling Green, with all things considered, to get another win. They'll have more rest than Miami. Miami is a team that doesn't have a high-powered offense, so it'll probably be a low-scoring game. Falcons will have extra time to game plan. This next one is a one that I think they'll certainly be an underdog, but I would think of the three, it's most gettable if you want to look at it in that way.
Without a doubt. I mean, Miami over the years has been a house of horrors for Bowling Green. It's not an easy place to play. The crowd is very loud. They're very boisterous. The question is the crowd going to come out on a Wednesday night for a Miami team that, you know, is largely mediocre? That's a question that we are going to find out. But you're going down there to Jaeger Stadium, and, you know, the Miami whammy is real. You and I have experienced it. We've seen teams completely get discombobulated down there in the Miami Valley, like it's the Bermuda Triangle. It may as well be in some cases. This is a chance, though, that we have to win the football game. We have a chance to win this football game. You know, Miami is unbeaten at home, but it's not like they can't be beaten. They're not really trying. They're not a team that's going to blow the doors off of you offensively. So this isn't a situation where Bowling Green needs to score 40 points. This could be a game where they could win. They, you know, 24 first to 24 wins the game. So you really want to make sure that you focus in, that you get healthy, that you're able to go out there. It'll be really good to see Devon Jones out there. If we can get Devon Jones out there, to get him back, to complement Bryson Denley, and then seeing if we see Andrew Clare or not, to see those types of things, to see that happen, see if we can make a push here, get another victory, get to a 500 record in the conference. These are all things that I think Coach Leffler, just listening to him talk, these are things that he's using to motivate the players. I thought listening to him talk yesterday, I actually watched the press conference, and he talked about, you know, this is the last time that the seniors were playing the Doit. And when you think about it, it sounds like a very poetic thing. But in all actuality, the grand scheme of it is that it's the last Saturday they're going to play in the Doit. What does that really matter? You still have a home game coming up against Ohio. But whatever small thing, and that's what good coaches do, they find little small things to motivate their players. A chance to get to 3-3 in the conference, based off of where we've been and what things have looked like at times during this season, that's a big thing. And that's probably further than what a lot of people thought this team was capable of, especially after the second, third weeks of the season.
And as we record this, of course, Maction, Miami, and Ohio will meet on Wednesday night. So by the time a lot of people hear this, that game will be in the can, as we say, and one of them will have 2 league losses. The other will be 4-1 in league play. But BG now transitioning into midweek football, no more Saturday games. But as this team hits the final stretch, I think we see the recipe for 2019 if this team's going to be successful. They'll have to be able to possess the football. I don't even think it has to be about a bunch of points or yards, Gibby. I think it's about keeping the football, cashing in opportunities when and if they present themselves, keep the defense rested, and get after the quarterback with an improving back end. This team can be successful over the last 3 games here.
I think what you did is that's the recipe. That's exactly what it is. That's the essence of Emerald that you just gave us. We basically have to be able to run the football, possess the football, and then we have to be able to create opportunities with the defense, whether that's just getting off the field or like last week where we were creating turnovers. We have to be able to, you know, make sure that we have the ball. The, you know, a three and out hurts every offense. With this team, it hurts even more so because of the questions that we have with depth. The more we have more depth on offense, surprisingly, than we have on defense. And so the longer we leave the defense out there, the more that it hurts them, and the greater our chances of finding a way to lose the game increase. The chances of us losing the game increase because we, you know, we have to have the ball. So I think that's the biggest thing. We want to make sure that offensive line, I know they're shuffling. You know, we had Sam Neveroff moving some guys, moving positions. Caleb Bright was out last week. Hopefully we can get Caleb back. And then that offense goes back to what it's always been. And hopefully we can find a way to just put some points on the board. Maybe we can get another situation like we had a few years ago where there's a 98-yard fumble return on what looks like, you know, going to be the play that really breaks the camel's back. Hopefully we can get something like that. It would be great to get. We've had some success over the past few years on these weeknight games at the University of Miami.
Yeah, and I think this team finally has created its identity for 2019 with so many question marks and changes that had to be made, and we'll see if they can pick off another win or two here down the stretch, beginning with that game at Miami. Gibby, always good to visit with you and talk BGSU football. We'll check in again.
All right, Todd, look forward to seeing you on Wednesday. I wanted to say Saturday. Look forward to seeing you on Wednesday. Going to be a lot of fun. And we'll be able to put everything together. Hopefully we get a W.
Talking BG hockey now as we welcome in head coach Ty Eigner. The Falcon Icers with a big road series this past weekend at number 2 Minnesota State, the leading team in the WCHA, the defending champs, and an exciting 2 days up there in Mankato. Falcons get a win on Friday, and the Mavericks get even on Saturday. Coach, let's start with the Friday night experience. Obviously the more pleasurable one of the two, but man, didn't start out like that. You guys were down pretty quickly there, 2-0 in the first 8-9 minutes.
Yeah, it was interesting, you know, going into the weekend, everybody in college hockey knows how good Minnesota State Mankato is this year, and you talk about our guys, you know, on the road and a hostile environment, and you just, you know, you hope you're ready for the puck drop period one, and like you said, it couldn't have started worse. You know, we took a penalty, I think, a couple minutes in, and then they score on the power play, and then they score again. And I remember looking up at the scoreboard thinking, this is going to be interesting to see how this thing goes the rest of the way. And we got to that first TV timeout, and we just said, listen, guys, we have to kind of get that deer in the headlights look out of your eyes, and you got to be willing to engage in this game, you know, compete in this game and play. And if you do that, then we're going to be fine, and we'll take the results. So we got a big goal out of Alec Rauhauser in the first period, which I think gave everybody a little bit of a boost of confidence. And so then you don't play great, but you go in only down one goal, you know, and to back up a little bit before Alec scored, Eric Dopp made a couple huge saves, Todd, at 2-0. Mm-hmm. That, you know, it could have been 4-0 in a hurry, and then that game would have probably been over. So we kind of withstood the storm and got into the end of the first there down 2-1 and talked about it, and we played really well in the second and just kept playing and for our guys to handle that situation, we learned a lot about our group for sure, and we learned a lot about which players in our team, you know, because again, regardless of how the results would have gone this weekend, win 2, lose 2, split, we know that Minnesota State Mankato is as good a team as there is in the country, and they can go any place and beat anybody. And so for our guys to go up there and go nose to nose with them for 2 games was really good to see.
And you talked about Eric Dopp. He ends up turning away 31 of the 33 shots, and clearly when you go down 2-0 early, the pressure really mounts, and to stone him twice like you were referring to there also has to be another just point of proof that you can do it against anybody, because there's no more pressurized situation for a goaltender than when you're down early on the road and they've got point blank shots on you and you got to make big saves.
Yeah, and Minnesota State's got some really talented kids too. So they've got, I believe, I could be wrong, but I believe they have the most returning scoring of any team in the country. So that ranking isn't based on last year or what they've done. That's how good they are right now. And so Eric, you know, he was really good for us and played really well. And as the game went on, you know, he settled in and more and more players, it seemed to get confidence. And so we had more guys enter into the fight and kind of be pulling the rope in the same direction. And it was fun to see. It was a really good weekend of college hockey, all in all.
And another guy that really steps up in a big situation, you talked about him, Alec Rauhauser. I mean, you're down 2-0. You need to find a way to score somehow, and he comes through with the big goal that provides that lift, that confidence boost. He seems like, to me, he's a gamer. You know, some guys just show up in big games. Seems like he's one of them.
You hit the nail on the head there, Todd. He's a gamer, in my opinion. He was the best player on the rink, both teams. All weekend long, he was noticeable. He scored goals. He defended. He scored a shorthanded goal on Saturday. He was really, really good all weekend long, and there were a bunch of really good players in that series. But Alec was outstanding. He's been good from the get go here this year, and he's you know, reminding us again he was an All-American as a sophomore, and it seems to me he's exactly where he was 2 years ago.
And another guy with the flair for the dramatic, Connor Ford. There he goes with the game winner on the power play in overtime. Certainly, he's a guy that doesn't shy away from the spotlight.
Nope, Connor. Connor's been real good on the power play of late. I think that's three power play goals in his last four games. So he's doing what he's typically does on the power play. He has a real good feel for that position and what his role is in that power play unit. And made a really good play. Coach Balkovec made an adjustment. Minnesota State was doing a really good job with their penalty kill against that group, so we made a small adjustment and moved Alex Barber out of the middle down to the side there, and they did exactly what they were told to do and ends up in the back of the net, which was great to see.
You know, another thing about Friday's win, only one power play goal for each team. Is it a bit heartening, too, that you scored two goals at even strength? In other words, you're playing without the advantage, just even against them, and you're coming away with two goals. So it wasn't like a fluke where you got a bunch of power plays or something like that. You really had to earn that comeback.
Exactly. And you know, we've talked before, we haven't scored as many 5-on-5 goals as we would have liked to up to this point. So to see us get two up there against a real good team was good. Unfortunately, we couldn't, you know, do that again on Saturday. But, you know, we looked at the tape and looked at a lot of our opportunities, and we did get some opportunities on the power play. But we had some opportunities 5-on-5 that just were just off. We feel like one of the things we need to look at moving forward is we've got to hit the net. We've got some really, really good, what we call grade A opportunities, and we missed the net. So you're just letting the goalie off the hook when you don't hit the net on those really good opportunities. But it was good to see us get a couple 5-on-5 goals on Friday for sure.
So you win 3-2 on Friday. Saturday, the score is 5-1. And if you just look at the score, people might think, well, Minnesota State reestablished their dominance and took it to you. But from what you said earlier, I don't think you necessarily feel that way. But take me through Saturday's game and how it kind of got away from you.
You know, it was a situation where we got down early. They scored a power play goal early, and then Alec Rauhauser, you know, scored a shorthanded goal on that same, you know, just after, and that was good. And the game was kind of going back and forth. I would say, you know, probably statistically and territorially, that Minnesota State probably had the better of the first period. So, you know, you're right back where you were on Friday night. You're down 2-1, and we had some really good chances in the second, and I felt like we probably had the better of the opportunities in the second period. We had some really good chances, and they just didn't go in. And now you're going into the, you know, the third period thinking, all right, let's just push here. Let's, what we were telling our guys, you know, get everything on the net, and, you know, get pucks to the net and crash to the net, and maybe we get a rebound or what we call like a greasy goal in basketball, like just a hustle basket or something. And unfortunately for us, Minnesota State had the same idea. They want to lose puck, and they kind of threw a puck at the net and kind of surprised Eric and kind of went through him a little bit. And so now it's 3-1, and then we make an indecisive decision on the forecheck, and it ends up in a breakaway, and they bury it. And you know, we had a breakaway, a mini breakaway just before that, and Brandon Cruz had a good opportunity and unfortunately couldn't cash in on it, and then they get one and they cash in. So now it goes from 2-1 to 4-1 real quick, and then the power play, the goal that they got late was real difficult. It was really no one's fault. We tried to make a play behind our net with the puck and get it clear, and as we passed it, we're passing it from one guy to the next, the referee was in the way, and it hit his skate and bounced right to the mm-hmm. front of the net, and there were two Minnesota State guys standing there, and they just passed it to each other and finished it. So it was a little bit of an unfortunate bounce there, but like you said, it was not a 5-1 game by any stretch. At 2-1 with 10 minutes left in the third period, it was a dead even game, and it could have been anybody's mm-hmm. game.
So now you're 5-4 overall, 2-2 in the WCHA, and number 17 in the new rankings that came out. And you get a week off here before you go to Alaska. Nine games in, roughly a fourth of the way through the season, an off week. Do you feel it's coming at a good time for your team? And what do you hope to get accomplished during this off week?
Well, you know, it's one of our longer trips in terms of the bus ride. So we practiced today, and we're going to give them some time off this weekend. So if you look at where we're at after nine games, I'd be lying if I said there weren't a couple of opportunities in those first nine games that we'd like to have back. But there's nothing you can do about those. So one of the things we've talked about with our team is we can only control today. You know, I used a clip I saw where Nick Saban was talking to his team about, you know, we get so caught up in, as a society, we talk about tomorrow. Tomorrow I'll lose weight, or tomorrow I'll study, or tomorrow I'll quit smoking. And really what we only need to worry about is today, you know. So and you can focus on yesterday a little bit too. Yesterday I was frustrated and it didn't go my way, and so that gets in the way of today. Or yesterday I was really good and then I get complacent and that gets in the way of today. So we're trying to take a daily approach, trying to look at using these next 8-9 practices before we go to Alaska to say, hey, how can we get better individually today? And then if everybody's bought into that and trying to do the best they can today, then as a group we'll get better. So we're gonna practice here this week, give the guys the weekend off to relax, and if they want to go home, or they want to, you know, if there's something they would like to do on the weekend, they've got that opportunity, then we'll practice Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday before we head up to Alaska, which, as you know, is always a difficult trip regardless of the records. And it's just you're flying, you know, by the time you land it's been, you know, probably 14 hours of travel from start to finish, and you're a lot closer to Russia than you are the lower 48, so it's got all kinds of uniqueness to it for sure.
Coach, final thoughts as you hit a pause in the action here and a chance to sort of look at your team's performance and where you are and where you're headed. As you look at each unit of things, offense, defense, power play, penalty kill, goalkeeping, all that, where do you think some of those units are in relation to where you thought you would be or where you need to be?
I'll start with just work our way out from the goal. You know, I think in terms of our goaltending, I think we've seen what our goaltending is capable of. The challenge, just like any other position, is for us to play at the level we're capable of, and we feel very comfortable with our goaltending and the players that are a part of that situation. So I think our goaltending is more than good enough for us to get to where we want to get to. On the back end, you know, we had an injury with Jake Dalton, so we're without a senior defenseman. The other group of guys that have been in there, I think they've all had some really good games. Obviously, Alec Rauhauser has been the leader for sure back there, but when you look at the number of man games we lost in those three seniors that graduated and plugging some new guys into there, I think we have to be happy with where our defensive core is at, but knowing that there's more. I think they can all raise their level in terms of their day-to-day and their consistency and ultimately in games. And then up front, you know, I think we're starting to see some guys that we, you know, had probably expected to be a part of our offense start to get going. We'd like to see us get more consistent scoring, you know, throughout our lineup and score some more goals 5-on-5. We've got some guys that I think are really close. We haven't, you know, mixed the lines up a whole lot. We've pretty much stayed with the group and shuffled some guys in and out of the lineup. But for the most part, 9 of those 12 guys have been in there pretty much every night. So I think just for us, from an offensive perspective, to just understand that I think we're capable of more. And right now, I don't think our goals for whatever it is right now today, Todd, I think it's going to be up. as we look at it. I don't think we'll continue to score as few goals a game as we are right now. I think we'll continue to score more, and hopefully next weekend in Alaska is our first opportunity to kind of improve in all those areas that we talked about. So we like our team. I think what this last past weekend showed is if Minnesota State's as good a team as that we're going to play and as good a team as there is in the country, and there were times this weekend where we were as good. So we just got to continue to – we can't be satisfied with that. We've got to push and try to improve. So when they come down here later in the year, maybe we get the better of them.
Yeah, that'll be January 17th and 18th, by the way. And Bowling Green not home again till Friday the 22nd and Saturday the 23rd of November when Lake Superior State comes in. Coach, hopefully the off week is productive and positive for you and your team. Enjoy it, and good luck in Alaska.
Thanks a lot, Todd. I appreciate it.
That's going to do it for this edition of the Ziggy Cast, and I'll be honest with you, I'm not sure when we'll post another one because my schedule is going to be quite hectic. We've got the basketball trip coming up this weekend to LSU and Miami, then I get back just in time to do the football game at Miami, then we have a basketball game on that Friday, and then we have football on Tuesday against Ohio, and then the basketball team leaves for the Virgin Islands, so I can't commit to posting another one on an exact date, but we'll do our best to get one in here over the next couple of weeks, dealing with football, men's basketball, and probably hockey in there as well. Until then, this is Todd Walker saying, "Hi, Ziggy Zumba."
Thanks for listening to the BGSU Ziggy Cast. Don't forget to subscribe, rate, and review however you listen. The preceding has been a Learfield presentation.